the church through it. So it's awesome that you're coming.
Yeah, it does. Some of the things that I've been doing in the heavenlies really over the last month or so, I've been quite significant, and I can see some of the outworking of it beginning to work. And when coming, I think is a significant time. I think it's a significant time for establishing government in that whole area, and that's, I think, important. But in light of some of the current events, I think hopefully I can bring some perspective on that. But then it's nothing I wasn't expecting. I've been expecting these earthquakes, because there's a voice crying out to the wilderness to cross over, and basically that voice is sort of the mountains have to come down and the valleys lifted up and the crooked ways made straight. And that means there's a big challenge to the existing ways and order of things, you really hope that the Moses generation will cross over and receive their inheritance, but they've built their mountains in the wilderness rather than living in tents. And it's a lot to give up when you've established a huge ministry and a huge mountain and you're on the top of it, to go and live in tents and go and embrace a new area. But that's the call, and people are responding to it, but some of the old orders are resistant to it. So we're in that place where some of that is being exposed and is going to come into the light, and there's going to be many sort of structures and things which are now going to be seen for what they are if they're not embracing what God is calling them to. God's judgment is being released, which is why there's this shaking. But it's always released to call people to life. It's just a verdict that says, hey, I'm not in this, but I'm over here. Come over here. Come and embrace me over here. And I think that's the challenge where things are. Are people willing to go with progressive revelation? I've heard some things this week which have been really interesting, and some of the things I've heard... I thought, I was expecting some of that, but not quite from where it came from. So I think we're in quite an interesting place. So coming over to spend a few weeks over in the US, I think it's maybe an interesting time. Anyway.
Well, I was shown this morning concerning the Lord likened, he just gave me this small little vision of not looking at the shame of, like Noah's sons did not look at his shame when he made a mistake. Okay, yeah. They just turned around and walked backwards. They didn't want to look. So it's kind of like that's what I think we're supposed to be doing with this. With Bill is that we bless him and we want to honor him, and but we want to walk backwards and not look at the shame or look at the mistake.
Absolutely, and I think there's huge honor to be given because they have set new parameters for things over a period of time and drawn people to see a new dimension of the supernatural and everything else. And I honor that, and I've been blessed by that. And I always love the intention to make their ceiling be someone else's floor and pass the baton. But it seems that now they've got to the point of passing the baton, then they're not prepared to do so. And I think, in weighing this, it wasn't unexpected, in a sense, for me. Because I know what's going on in the heavens right now, so it wasn't a shock, but it's a disappointment. You still, God is issuing the call, cross over, come and follow the cloud, and come and embrace the new order of things. Unfortunately, it's like how things were done. It left everything vague and in the air. It's very difficult to renounce someone publicly without actually saying what the issues are, and the issues weren't brought into the light, and that leaves everyone in the darkness, and I don't think that's very helpful. But I think one of the key things that I picked up was, you know, the ministry school asked, or one of the persons asked, you've always encouraged us to go for God no matter what the cost. And that's something they've always done. And now there's a caveat to that. Yes, but within biblical parameters. And that's what was said. You know, yeah, go for God no matter what the cost, but within biblical parameters. Now, who sets the biblical parameters? Because I guarantee that the generation who are accusing Bill Johnson of all sorts of stuff, that he's a heretic and he's a cult and all that, they set their biblical parameters that Bill Johnson and Bethel challenged and completely changed. And they're accused now, of other people are now setting new biblical parameters, and they're resisting that. So effectively, they're doing to someone else what's been done to them. And that's a sad thing, because they should know what it feels like.
Yeah.
To be accused of this, that, and the other, which is so sad, you know. And I feel that's what's happening. You know, who is now setting the biblical parameters for what's right and what you can go for God in? Because if they're setting them, then they're setting the bar way too low. You know, and the reality is, there is, what is a biblical parameter? You know,
yeah.
If it's only things in the Bible, then we would not be doing most, I wouldn't be looking at you now on this screen if only things in the Bible were possible, because this would be outlawed, because there's no computer screens or cars or airplanes or anything else in the Word. But those things are just things in life. You know, there are so much more. I mean, Jesus, you know, it was written of Jesus in John, if all the things that Jesus did were put in books, it would fill the whole world with a library, you know, because not just the things he did on earth, but the things he did in heaven and as a Son of God in creation, if all those things were put in, well, how do we think we can contain God and God's purposes and heaven and its dimensions and everything in God within a book? It's just impossible. And if you're setting biblical parameters, then those biblical parameters have been changing every so many years over history as God brings progressive revelation. And they are proponents of progressive revelation, but God is revealing more and more of the reality of what the Bible really means and who he is himself to us. But as soon as you start setting what those parameters are and limiting them, you become the arbitrators of them that you then have to defend. And that's unfortunately with a situation where it is. And, you know, that is so sad. But as you say, yeah, we don't want to look at that. We want to look forward to where we're going and not backwards in that sense, and have, you know, I my desire is that whole movement and all the other movements that are on the other side of the Jordan, figuratively, and have not yet crossed over, will cross and will desire and will be willing to pay the cost to cross over and embrace the new. You know, and when you look at it, it's like everything that was once old is, you know, once new is now old. You know, we now treat so much for granted that this is just normal Christian life, but many people fought battles to be able to win for us, so that we're living in the good of baptism and the Spirit and baptism and water and the reality of things, which were controversial things many years ago, until people said, no, we're actually going to embrace the reality of this truth and embrace it and live it. You know, and I think the whole Bethel thing has done that. And Jason Westerfield was responsible for quite a lot of that in opening up the realms of miracles and taking it to the streets and, you know, operating in a whole open heaven prophetic realm, you know, as very much part of that. Now, he's moved, but they've stayed, you know, and that's the sad thing, you know, that there is a sadness. And I felt with a heavy heart when I watched and listened to not just what was said, but how it was said, and you know, it was a serious thing, but it was a lot of joviality and making light of things and almost like making a joke rather than, look, this is serious, actually, you know. Yeah, and, you know, I spoke to someone yesterday who spoke to someone who's 3 years at the Bethel School of Ministry who was at that Jason Westerfield conference, and they said, absolutely not. He did nothing to do what they're saying he did. You know, and they're in Bethel, in the ministry school, and they were at that conference, and they said there is absolutely nothing he did that would warrant what was said about him. You know, and I'm not aware. I've heard Jason refer to the difficult time he's had. He was nothing but honoring to the people who he was finding it difficult with, and he mentioned no names and was only honoring to them in spite of the... He carried no bitterness in his heart that I could see, you know, which is what the accusation is, which has opened him up to deception, and then deception and an angel of light can come and deceive him. You know, it's sad. You know, but we're in this place where we now need to see that a line has been drawn. This is going to polarize people, and we need to be encouraging of those not to stay in the old, but to embrace continuing to seek progressive revelation of personal intimacy with God, which is going to take us beyond the veil to embrace that. I mean, it's okay for Bill Johnson to say, yeah, I went into heaven and I saw all these amazing things. But you can, you know, I mean, I'm not saying he's saying that, but that's the implication. It was okay for me. I brought that revelation, and now we're bringing heaven to earth. Heaven's invading earth. But the reality is we need to go to heaven. You know, we need to live in that realm, not just bring miracles to earth. We need to administrate the kingdom and establish heavenly government so that the rule of God is on the earth, not just miracles and signs and wonders. We have to start to begin to administrate God's kingdom, his rule, to bring dominion. And that means changing the culture, changing the affairs of the nations, actually beginning to bring sonship onto the earth as manifested sons of God. And I know that's a dirty word for people, some people, but actually it's a biblical word. You know, Romans 8 very clearly says that creation is waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God. It's groaning, waiting to be brought into the freedom of the glory of the sons of God. As children of God, we have a glory that the earth has been waiting for. Yeah, and we need to be, you know, bringing as it is in heaven on earth. And I think this is some of where, you know, the challenges lie. You know, it's okay to see heaven invading earth, but actually we're called to go and live there and function in the multi-dimensions that are there, not just be restricted to this one dimension, you know. And that is a huge challenge, and I'm aware, obviously, that's a big thing for a lot of people. But now this has come about, it has opened up the discussion, and it certainly was going to cause tremors to begin to shake where people are, and challenge them to, what is God doing through this? And it's a call to cross over into something new. You know, and all those mountains in the wilderness, because, you know, that's what they are. There is a voice crying into the wilderness saying, prepare the way of the Lord. Prepare the way for my people to cross over into the fullness of their inheritance. And that was the mountains need to be made low. The valleys need to be lifted up. You know, there are multitudes now in the valley of decision who cannot see the choice to cross over. So the valleys need to be lifted up so those people can see there is another way. You can cross over into a new promise, the inheritance, the fullness of your inheritance. Mountains need to be made low. So those who are on top of mountains, those mountains need to be shaken. And we're going to see what is of God's kingdom and what isn't. And that's the verdict that's coming. Shaking only shows, according to Hebrews 12, what is of God's kingdom. It was when that original shaking took place in AD 70, it very clearly what defined what was the new covenant and what was the old, which was obsolete. And that is what is happening now. You know, what is the old wineskin? It's obsolete. And what is the new wineskin that we all need to drink new wine from? And Jesus made it really clear, you can't patch up the old. You can't stick patches on it, and you can't put new wine into it. You have to have a new wineskin for new wine. You know, and God is wanting to establish heavenly government on the earth. And therefore, the old systems of government are no longer recognized by God. You know, he wants to see heavenly government established on the earth, which is a reflection. You know, people have copied heaven's government, and heaven's government is God is on top of a mountain on his throne, bench of three, Father, Son, and Spirit. Now, if you copy that, you end up with a mountain on earth with people on the top of it. If you reflect it, you have people on earth in the foundations, releasing people out to go wider and wider and wider and further and higher, because they don't restrict it. If you're on top of a mountain, there's nowhere to go. Where can people go if people are on top of a mountain? Nowhere, because it restricts. But if you invert that mountain and people are in the dirt, it gets wider and wider. People can go out from the revelation that's been brought to release people into their destinies. And that's what God's looking for. Destiny released, not destiny restricted. Yeah, and that means leadership must be servant leadership who are willing to be stood on to release other people to go higher and further. So you release people into their destiny and out of where they are so that they can go further and they can embrace God. You don't need any mediatorial spirit standing before God and man. Jesus has done it all. He's the only mediator we need of a new covenant, and he's opened up the veil for us to come boldly with confidence into the Holy of Holies of God's presence. We don't need any mediator on the top of a mountain between us and God. Whether they're prophets, apostles, you know, they should be foundationally equipping people to engage and hear God for themselves and get their own destinies and blueprints from God themselves, not placing themselves between God and man and therefore restricting people's access into that realm. And that's what the old is, and that old is being removed. It's obsolete. You know, and its power is being removed in authority, and God is giving a new authority to the order of Melchizedek, who will function as a heavenly royal priesthood, you know, to release blueprints onto the earth that have apostolic and prophetic foundations that release people, you know, not restrict people. So we're in a pretty challenging time, you know, so yes, yeah, it's a sort of a, in one sense, an opportune time to come. In another sense, it'll be really interesting to see where people are. But, you know, we're in that place. And I reiterate, you know, I have nothing but honor for Bill Johnson and Bethel and what they've done. I'm just so disappointed that they're not going to continue moving with where that leads rather than sticking with where they are in it. But, you know, God is going to keep calling. So let's pray they hear the call.
Yeah. You know, Mike, on April the 11th, I had another time in D.C. But this time I didn't know what it was, but I went. And during the site thing, we went to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and watched the changing of the guard. God said, pay attention. So I sent out to my, you know, my little team, you know, pay attention to changing of the guard. The very next day, on another sightseeing excursion, we went to the National Museum of the American Indian. As soon as I walked into the exhibit, I ran into an electrical fence of an angel. You know, bam. He followed me the entire time, left with me, and God said, this is what it means. New angels assigned. And I know it's not for just me, but there's a changing of a guard, higher level of angelic health. I mean, so much so that it's been hard for my body to even acclimate to the frequency of this angel, you know, it can be a little difficult. But I know this means more than just for me. There is a change, there is a higher, you know,
yeah.
And it's just strange. I haven't found his name has First Nations origin, and it means tempest or storm. So it's like, things are really spinning and changing.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. We're in that period of real preparation for what's coming in August. I think August is an end of a generation and beginning of a new. And I believe 2012 was the end of an old order and the beginning of a new. And you know, I remember 2012. I mean, God's really reminded me of some things for that. I remember prophesying to our church, and we have 3 years to prepare. You know, and it was like, you know, and I didn't know what I was saying. You know, I just released that word. We've got 3 years to prepare. You know, and I was like, okay, what do we do now? Well, for me, immediately in 2012, I was inspired to do a whole series on transformation and to be prepared for what's coming. You know, right down to DNA transformation and everything that entailed. You know, transforming our motives, our trading floor, everything. You know, it was a complete, okay, there's a whole load of things that we need to get prepared for. But I remember Mark Verkler, who, you know, is a guy who's done books about hearing the voice of God, you know, and things like that. Great guy. He sent me a manuscript to a book called Heaven Touching Earth. And he said, this manuscript, I'm looking for 95 leaders around the world to make a prophetic statement similar to what Martin Luther did when he nailed the 95 thesis to the Wittenberg church door and called for a reformation. And he said, we're going to get 95 leaders to endorse this book, and we're going to publish it on the internet and post it like the equivalent of the door, and we're going to call for a church reformation. And the whole book was just completely supporting and endorsing heavenly encounters, angelic encounters, men in white linen encounters, you know, completely opening up the realm of heaven, accepting these were biblical things, that they were something that this was normal for, that should be normal for the church, a supernatural dimension that we should live in. And I remember thinking, yeah, I'm going to sign that. And I sent it back and signed it. And then I had later the whole book was published, and, you know, and I was, my name was in it as endorsing this. And I felt, okay, yeah, that 3 years, that was the call for reformation. It was a prophetic act to bring transformation and change to the whole church, to reform the church into godly order. And that was 3 years ago, you know. And it wasn't until Bob Jones showed up in our meeting the weekend after he'd died physically, he showed up with a scroll, fiery scroll, and said, you know, are you willing to take responsibility for the harvest? You know, and I was like, yeah, I am. You know, and so we took that scroll, and as I took it, it was like the whole thing of what that harvest was and the prophecy. I needed to find it, and I found it in August. I think it was August the 8th, 1975, that he prophesied a billionfold harvest that was coming, and now we're one whole generation in August from that point, and the majority of the church have ignored it or have misinterpreted it and applied it to youth and various other things rather than being prepared. That was the call for the Joshua generation, to be prepared for the harvest to come. And the focus was on the harvest, not the preparation for it. And so for 40 years, there's been no preparation by and large. You know, and now we're 40 years later, and here's the call to be ready for the harvest that's coming, to equip them in as supernatural harvesters for the end. And that whole group has failed to embrace the call to it, to intimacy. You know, and we're in that place where there are some forerunners who've heard the call and are now, you know, seeking to call as many people as we can to be ready for what's coming and to cross over, you know, and not say, like the children of Israel, well, we can't cross over, you know, but to say, no, our inheritance is this, and we're going to receive it, and we're going to bring that next generation with us into the fullness of their inheritance in heaven and on earth, And I believe that's where we are. You know, we're at a crucial juncture, a convergence of time in which this is a really significant point that we need to embrace, you know, and call as many people as we can to embrace it, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting time. But it is a changing of the guard, you know, that old order coming to an end and the new one is beginning. You know, when you're in transition, it's obviously really difficult. The old stops working before the new is fully functioning. So you have to be willing by faith to embrace it and to pursue it and engage it. And that's where I believe we are. We're at that point. You know, yeah. There we go.
And you know, I could really, really use some help with this ley line. I told you about the ley line going across from California to New York. Four key points. The four that were set up to for children who God set over this ley line to establish the seats of government, to decree things. And then, you know, like I said, I told you before, the hit came, and everybody kind of slinked off of the seat. And I, you know, went up and I stabbed it. I said, you know, well, we need angelic presence to guard these seats of government. But, Mike, everywhere across this ley line is the usurp of authority, this challenge of authority with the riots and the police. Every city across this ley line, these things are happening, including mine, although it has not, you know, I refuse to let anything break out the same way. But they're all cities across this ley line. We need help. I don't know what to do. I mean, you know, I'm like, Lord, help. I'm not going to go.
Sure.
Listening.
Yeah, okay. That's an interesting one, isn't it?
I mean, is there a problem? Yeah. Maybe I can talk or we can connect. Or,
yeah. I mean, I understand, you know, when we're in these situations, we begin to see things from a new perspective, and then we then have to catch up and begin to learn how to administrate the government of those things. And yeah, it's not for the faint-hearted. You have to have a different spirit, like Joshua and Caleb, willing to embrace the giants. And some of these are the giants that are manifesting in the land to get people to say, we're grasshoppers. We can't deal with this stuff. You know, we need to stay on the other side because this is too much for us. And that's really why these things are happening. The enemy is looking to intimidate and hinder people by getting people to view themselves as unable to rise up into these positions of authority because, you know, it's too intimidating. And you know, it's like, well, we started to do this and look what happened, you know, and to be frightened of that. Now, what we must do is recognize what it is. It's a strategy, a scheme of the enemy to intimidate people from taking up their rightful places of government and beginning to administrate heaven to earth. And the only thing you can do is to stand firm, engage in the positions of authority in heaven that you can, and call those to respond, you know, and call people to respond to this government of this area, whatever it is, and begin then to get a mandate for what it is you need to do, you know. And yes, certainly, you know, bring government into your own area, the sphere that you're called to, and call out for people to engage. I mean, I've been doing this for quite a while, is looking to see government and calling out for people to embrace it, and calling out for people's spirits to hear the call and feel the frequency of the call, and you know, this blue light and the stuff about, you know, engaging that frequency, so that we can see government established, you know. And if we don't, then we'll never change culture or affect the affairs of the nations until we establish government, you know. And the enemy's doing everything he possibly can to stop people engage in heaven, to engage their destiny and the position of government as a son in heaven, to begin to administrate and legislate, you know, because you have to learn how to legislate. You know, to start with, you just have to learn how to rule, to govern your own life. you know, and rule your own house. But then there's a wider rule, and then there's charge of the courts. But you have to mature in that process. So right now it's trying to present to people the truth that will help them not run, but to say, look, this is our inheritance. We've got to cross over. There may be a Jordan that looks like it's in flood, so it looks like it's impossible for us to even get over. But as soon as you put your feet in that water, the waters part, you know, and you walk over on dry land, you know. So although the waters seem to be in flood, it's just an opportunity for a miracle to take place, a supernatural parting of the waters so that we can walk over. But people look at it and think, impossible, can't do it. And then they look at all these events and they look at all the things that are going on and they think, oh, it's just too much, you know. And the temptation is to go with the old thing, oh, come and rescue us, Jesus. You know, we need rescuing. No, we need to establish the government and take dominion and begin to operate in authority and administrate that. But we have to start where we are, and we're on a journey. And, you know, people are never going to legislate a city or a ley line or a whole region without first legislating their own lives. And so we have to start teaching people to legislate in their own life, to come from a place of rest and the place of government in their lives, and to occupy their seats in the realms of heaven and begin to administrate their own lives, calling their circumstances into alignment, you know, beginning to call things that be not as if they were, to challenge the enemy activity within our spheres of influence and to evict him from influence in us. But we have to do that first and learn how to do it in our own lives, so that then we can take a wider governmental sphere, and then begin then to seek for the strategies. And that means we may need to do many court cases, that why the enemy has authority. We need to identify what are the legal rights that the enemy's had to do these things, and where we stand in identification for those situations. And we then can get the right papers, the verdict from heaven, that gives us the authorization to begin to change things. But it's not going to just happen in an instant. You know, we have to learn the protocols of heaven. You know, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So if we cannot go and engage the as it is and then begin to legislate the as it is, it's never going to be on earth as it is. You know, it's our responsibility as sons, given responsibility for the created order, to bring it back into its rightful place and to answer its groan. You know, the whole earth responds to sonship. When Jesus demonstrated his sonship on the cross, the whole earth responded. The created order responded to it. The earth shook, the rock split open, the veil of the temple was torn. Everything responded to sonship, and it will respond to sonship when we're in the position of understanding our identity as sons of God and our governmental position that brings, and that we're willing to take responsibility. And that's the problem. A lot of people are unwilling to take responsibility because they have a wrong view of God, who is going to punish them if they get it wrong, and is waiting to see them get it wrong, to pounce on them and beat them with a stick. You know, that's so many people's view of God, rather than a loving Father who welcomes us into his arms and gives us a ring and a robe and celebrates and calls us back into intimacy and restores us. You know, but there's such a wrong view of God. And even the view of judgment that Christians have presents God as this wicked despot who's out to punish people. No, Jesus took all the punishment and the wrath that there is. God is kindness, is drawing people to repentance, and he's welcoming us with open arms. He's always smiling, he's always in a good mood over us, and he longs for us to come into intimacy with him. And there's those that are saying, no, you're a hard taskmaster, you reap where you don't sow, and they're causing people to bury themselves in the earth rather than going and multiplying themselves in the earth. You know, and that's the problem. You know, the parable of the talents was a wrong view of God that caused somebody to not take hold of their destiny because of fear. And God is not a God to be feared in that way. He's a God to be awestruck by and to have respect and honor for, but not to be afraid of him because we think he's hard and harsh and he's going to punish us, because he's not. You know, if we do sin and we're unrepentant, then of course the consequences of our sin gives the enemy legal right to afflict us. But it's not God, because we can run to him and be cleansed and brought into that place of intimacy with him whatever we do. You know, we must run to him. You know, and unfortunately, most people are following the path of the knowledge of good and evil in that they're hiding in the bushes and they're covering up, rather than embracing the fiery sword and being purified and refined. Because Adam and Eve could have gone through where the cherubs and the fiery sword was. Enoch did, and so did others. They chose to go into the bushes and hide from God and try and cover up their nakedness with fig leaves, you know, representing man's best efforts, which will never amount to anything in the purposes of God. So, you know, we're in a place where we have to start presenting the real God to people. You know, people have to see. I remember reading a book years ago by Philip Yancey, you know, about the Jesus I never knew. You know, there needs to be another one written about the Father I never knew. You know, that represents the true fatherhood of God that calls us into sonship and enables us to embrace our sonship, because we really are meeting with the true God, not the religious image that's being portrayed. And to be honest, it's the religious institution that's giving God such a bad press and doing the enemy's publicity for him. You know, the enemy's hardly having to do any publicity. It's Christians who do most of it by presenting God in such a legalistic religious way, rather than the wonderful relationship that we can have that brings us into the freedom of who we are and our identity in him. There's these religious rules that it's all negative. You know, we need to see God seen as a loving, healing God who wants to restore people and bring people into their eternal destiny. That's a God people will want to follow. You know, would you want to follow someone who's going to beat you up all the time? No way. You know, and that isn't who God is. But it's certainly the way he's been portrayed, and we have to see that change, you know, really change. You know, which is why there needs to be a change of God and a new order come in, who can present the reality of God from a personal experience, not theory and intellectual knowledge. You know, that's the difference. We have to personally experience God to know him, not just read about him, be told about him, hear sermons about him, but never personally encounter him and never go to be with him. You know, we're called to intimacy, to know him by personal experience and encounter. You know, head knowledge is not any knowledge. You know, is there a court we need to mediate a change in government? There is us who take our positions of government and administrate the courts to effect change. So if you're going to legislate, yes, you need to go to the Court of Kings. Yeah, you need to go to the Court of Chancellors. You need to get things sealed. Yes, you need legislation put into the Court of Scribes where they record it. And you need the Court of Angels to release the authority and be assigned to those legislative mandates. So there are many different court systems that you need to be able to understand. But bottom line is, you could have all those courts, but if you haven't got someone who's willing to take their positions of government on the mountain and rule, then it's just a system that no one can operate. And so we need to learn how to rule and administrate it from our positions of governmental authority, and for God to bring us to that place of maturity that releases us to function in that. And that's why we need the seven spirits of God to bring us into that governmental place, and we need to learn. You know, God is not going to give someone the authority to change a nation before they've changed their own life. You know, so we have to learn to start with us, and then begin to grow and mature in the level and position of authority that we have, so that we can then begin to administrate it. You know, and there are those who are being called to higher realms of government who can engage the assemblies of God and stand in His presence, who are beginning to effect change. But that change only is a call for people to respond, to come into government. You know, what's going on in the shaking of things, you can shake the old down until there's nothing left of it, but if you haven't got anyone to establish the new, then all you've done is destroyed the old. You know, we need to see that there are two things that go hand in hand. God removes the old wineskin, but He establishes a new one. And we are the wineskins. You know, this is us. This is sonship. You know, we are the carriers of the new wine. You know, so it has to be us taking our positions of authority in the realms of heaven, that then the authority that has been released at a higher level will be released to us to act and to respond and to take that legislation, begin to administrate it in our own lives and into our own ecclesia, into our own regions, into our ley lines, or whatever else we might have authority, parallels across the U.S. You know, people have different levels of authority. You know, I'm personally wanting to see government established. You know, it's the cry of my heart since I accepted the call to take responsibility for some of these things in the heavens. You know, my heart yearns for government to be established in heaven and on earth, you know, and I'm longing to see that, you know, and I can, you know, I'm drawn to it, you know, and it's part of the reason of coming over to the U.S. now is because there's a call for government to be established, you know, and a pattern of government which is going to be replicated all over, you know, that someone's got to go first, you know, and God's told me the last shall be first and the first shall be last, so we're going to see, you know, what that means in reality, but there's going to be there is a change coming. Yeah. All right. Any other things people want to share or comment about? Is everyone hearing that? All right, okay, yeah. I mean, is everyone hearing sort of the squeaky sound that was coming? Yeah. It was like, Patricia, you were speaking with a high-pitched voice that we couldn't understand, so I'm not sure whether your mic is distorting or something. So it might be that you need to either use the chat or something just to, if you want to ask something, because we couldn't hear it. I don't know whether it's the mic is turned up too much or whatever it is, but it's certainly coming from a difficult thing. So feel free to write something. But in the meantime, has anyone else got anything they want to ask or share? All right, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I believe that the things we begin to administrate in heaven will have an earthly expression. So what that means for that on earth, I don't know. But I'm sure God will show you as you begin to outwork it. Yeah, you know, those things do have to have an earthly expression in one way or another. They may be a reflection of something that happens in that realm, but there certainly needs to be the as it is in heaven on earth. And so the things we start to see and God begins to engage there, you know, will have an earthly effect without a doubt. You know, even if they are primarily heavenly in their expression, it must have an earthly effect. Otherwise, there isn't an awful lot of point. I don't know. You know, I think this is where we've got to see that there is so much more than we can yet imagine or think. And the mysteries that are hidden are being unveiled. Some of the things are beyond our present capacity to explain them in earthly terms. And therefore, you know, some of the things I'm seeing, I'm struggling to find words to express a meaningful expression of it because there just don't seem to be any. And I think the reality is if you think of taking someone from, I don't know, the year 1700, and they're riding around in a horse and cart and they got candles for light, and you bring them into 2015, and you might tell them about iPhones and tablets and computers and TVs and electricity and running water and all that stuff. I mean, most of it they're going to have no grid of reference for, even though you're trying to explain in words, they wouldn't understand them. And when you look into the realms of heaven, into things that don't yet exist on the earth, it's like that. You haven't got words to express what it really is, you know. And so it's quite difficult, and I find it quite difficult, you know. And I'm finding, okay, there's some symbolism, and I'm looking at, yeah, but how do I unveil that, you know? And I think that's going to be a lot, you know, that we're coming into stuff that there is no grid for as this point. And some people who are now expressing the grid or trying to just allude to some of the things that are coming, obviously being vilified. So it's going to be difficult. And we have to be prepared that when we're bringing the revelation of the things that come out of heaven, not everyone's going to be happy. So we must keep our hearts pure, make sure we forgive people, make sure that we don't carry any resentment or bitterness, but never be put off to compromise and to, you know, pull back. You know, because God is looking for those who are willing to pay the cost. And, you know, that's got to be our generation if we're going to see the fullness of things that God wants released onto the earth. You know, cities of refuge are going to operate in completely different governmental orders. You know, and everything's going to change. It isn't going to be the same. You know, and I think that's the biggest problem for people. They can't see, well, how could things be any different? You know, and I think there are a number of TV programs that have come out who've prophetically caught a glimpse of, hey, the world could be so different overnight. You know, there's a few of them that I get drawn to those things because I catch the prophetic significance. You know, and some of them, I mean, like Revolution is one. You know, all of a sudden there's some mystical thing that's released into the air that absorbs all the electricity and there's no power. And it's like, ooh, what would we do if there was no power? You know, well, we can produce our own power source because we will have the ability to bring power out of heaven and have our own power source, because that's how cities of refuge will function. Out of the power source of zero point energy from heaven, we won't be constrained to the earth, you know. But that's what will set everything apart. We won't be phased by the collapse of earthly things because we will have a heavenly perspective and we will live under a heavenly government, not an earthly one, you know. And there are other ones that give illustrations of what it might happen if, you know, there was a plague that took place, you know, and no one could be healed other than those that are living in cities of refuge who are living in health, and can minister supernatural healing. Can you imagine if there was an incurable plague that swept across the U.S. and you had centers of refuge established, you know, every, you know, 10, 20 miles across the U.S. that were living in health? They would have, you'd have queues of people lining up. The highways would be full of people lining up to come and get healed and to come and live in health and wholeness. Well, that's what it could well be like. So we've got to get ready. You know, we must start to establish a government that's operating from heaven and be ambassadors of heaven, living on the earth, but ambassadors of heaven, living under heaven's government, administrating a different realm in authority and power as sons of God. It's coming. We've got to be ready and embrace it and not intimidated by the current perspectives that we're in and just keep going for it, you know, and start to see yourself the way God sees you. You know, that's the key. And yeah, we do have to deal with those things in our own lives, which are hindrances and blockages. You know, the whole period that we've been in for the last couple of years is all about removing stumbling blocks and lawlessness. You know, that is the period. You know, God has called people to intimacy. And when you embrace intimacy and you know you're loved, you know you're accepted, you know God approves, you know God is for you, then you can accept the discipline of God to transform and conform us to a different image. We don't take it as, oh no, God doesn't like me. We actually see, no, he loves me and he loves me too much to leave me stay in this state. yeah, and that's where we are. Okay. Yeah, I mean, to help someone move into something new, you have to embrace it yourself, and you have to live in it and have a testimony of it that you can then begin to administrate. And in that situation, you know, I believe we are going to see creative miracles and miracles that come out of living in heaven, rather than looking to do earthly miracles, you know, and things are going to change. But we're in this transition period. So, you know, it's not operating in perfection. I mean, I can only, in my own life, in terms of healing and health, you know, taking communion, applying the body and blood of Jesus, the frequency of God, that health, bringing us into health and wholeness, transforming us, you know, beginning to administrate, calling things that be not as if they were, beginning to call out, you know, I mean, I've worked through, you know, healing and health, you know, for 20 years, you know, I've lived in it. I wouldn't do it the way I did it 20 years ago to get hold of it now, because I've got fresh revelation. You know, I would administrate it in the courts of heaven. You know, I would go and take a healing case there and find out what the roots are that are still operating, because there must be a legal right. You know, and then you then begin to build a case and then begin to administrate that case. And sometimes you have to administrate it for a while before you get the breakthrough in it. But there are a number of things you can do to begin to prepare the way for coming into the fullness of heavenly government. And another thing you can do is take someone in your heart and encompass them around in your heart, and then when you step into that realm, take them with you so that they are, you know, in your heart, and eternity is in your heart, says in Ecclesiastes. So you're opening the gate for them to come into their eternal inheritance. You know, so there's a number of things I think that revelation is being released, and frequency as well is a key one, and seeing heaven's frequency begin to align earthly frequencies. Through the sounds of heaven, through the fragrances of heaven, you know, some things, you know, there's, you know, some people are using essential oils and those sorts of things. I personally just sort of went my own route on that in terms of how I started to live in health, but I'm now progressing that into not just living in health, but living forever, you know, not dying, you know, so there's nothing in my DNA that carries a record of death. I want to get to that point where it's completely transformed and conformed so that there is no death. you know, within my genetic record. Well, I do that every day, you know, and I give my heart on the altar, and I get it unraveled, and I get new refining fire on it every day from the altar to see it changed. You know, it would be really nice if it was just like, well, here's the whole lot, just do it instantly. But that's not that's not relationship. You know, that's magic. God wants us to walk through the process with him of daily yielding and surrender to daily transformation. You know, not just, you know, I think the whole charismatic movement has sort of presented a, well, just lay hands on someone and it'll all be sorted. You know, and I'm not saying that miracles don't occur, but it's set up a culture that hasn't got the perseverance to press through until something becomes our own, because we're dependent on someone else doing a laying on our hands. You know, and I don't believe that's the culture God wants. God wants us to be walking in the revelation of the truth, because the truth we know sets us free. But we need to know that truth, and truth is a person, and the truth is a relationship that we have with that person. It's not, you know, push a microwave button. And that's where we're in an age that wants everything instant, and it doesn't come instantly. You know, my DNA came from Adam, you know, through Noah, and, you know, it carries the record and generational record that goes back a long time. You know, that's contained within my autosomes, you know, and there's a lot of it. You know, every strand of DNA, if you pull out the nucleus of a cell, would be something like 6 feet long. Not very wide, but 6 feet long. You know, so there's a lot of DNA in the trillions of cells that I've got in my body. So I have to see it transformed, and I daily present myself. And there's a really cool video that you can find on Vimeo, which I think Ian Clayton is, or maybe on his website, about, you know, the DNA process and walking through into the realm of heaven and coming to this altar and the DNA being unraveled and it being purified. It's a really cool little thing, but I do it every day. You know, it's a thing I do every day. I go to the altar in the temple of God, and I'm undone. I'm unraveled. And it's like, just as Isaiah, you know, it's like, I'm a man of unclean lips amongst a people of unclean lips. Well, take that in reference. You know, I'm a man of unclean lips because my generational line has unclean lips within it. So, you know, it's Isaiah recognizing that he was from a line of people that were unclean, and therefore the altar was taken, coal from the altar with a seraphim to purify that. And then the wonderful response at the end of it is, here am I, send me. There's always a call to destiny as a result of purification and refining. And we can be proactive about it and present ourselves for it, or we can be reactive and we respond to the trials and tribulations that come. You know, I think God uses those things, but if we're proactive, we can shorten the cycle, because we're embracing change and transformation, not resisting it. But it takes time. You know, so I don't give up. Keep persevering. You know, carrier in your heart. When you step into the realms of heaven, you know, engage in the court for her, and, you know, begin to, you know, see her DNA transform. You know, give her communion every day. You know, it's just a reality that she can embrace because of your faith, and you can speak those words over her, you know, and I would encourage you to do that. You know, it's a process. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I'm going to leave it there.